tears will turn into laughter. Laughter will turn into song.
I don't think anybody ever really thought that something like this was going to happen. I know that I didn't.
I'm just trying to bring you back home.
Welcome to the mysterious and unbelievable case of the Bat Boy and the Hot Dogs, Episode 4. I'm Josh Durham.
And I'm Ashley Pace.
Our podcast is the story of the 1990 Burlington Indians, one of the greatest teams that Burlington has ever had in terms of future major league talent. And our jobs working for the team that summer were among the greatest jobs we've ever had.
Our podcast is a way for us to walk down memory lane 3 decades later with the players and staff from that team. It's also a way to find out whether I, Ashley Pace, the team's bat boy, cost Frank Monastero his professional baseball career.
You'll remember that we ended episode 3 with this. So, Frank, this is a true or false question.
Okay.
So, true or false, Frank Monastero's professional baseball career ran its course completely independent of anything that Ashley Pace ever did.
That's true or false?
Yeah.
I don't know how to answer that.
Now he's got to think about it.
But if you listen to the trailer for this podcast, you'll remember that we promised to take on another mystery too. Here's what we said. We even take on another mystery that has arisen since we started this project. Why is Major League Baseball out to kill the minor leagues? It's time we get into that, because a lot is going on in the world of minor league baseball these days.
In episode 1, we introduced you to Miles Wolf. Wolf purchased the Durham Bulls back in 1980, bringing baseball back to that city after a 9-year absence. Here's a fun fact. He bought the Durham Bulls for less than $2,500. He said they were basically giving away franchises back then.
He hadn't owned the Bulls long when the possibility of a movie came along. That movie, of course, was Bull Durham. Many people say that without Miles Wolf, the Bulls, and Bull Durham, minor league baseball would never have gotten to be as popular as it did. Here's how the movie came about.
When I started the Bulls, I literally didn't have any money, but the league didn't look at that, so that was a good thing. So I had to start selling some stock to, you know, get a little working capital. And a friend of mine in baseball, I asked him if he wanted to invest, and he said, I'll put a little in. And I said, do you know anybody else? And he said, I know somebody on the West Coast that might be interested. He's originally from Durham, and his name was Tom Mount. He was working for Universal Pictures as a producer, and he said, sure, you know, and he invested a little. And that first winter, the year before we started the season, he came back to Durham to visit his parents and came by the ballpark and said, you know, Miles, someday we'll make a movie here. And I thought, sure, yeah. And I said, well, right, Tom, anytime you want to. And 6 years later, he sent a screenwriter, Ron Shelton, to town. And, Ron had the idea for a minor league movie on baseball and loved the ballpark, loved the city, and Bull Durham came out of it.
And here's how it affected things in Durham.
Well, we had been doing really well. The Bulls came on and just one of those teams that clicked. Everything went right. We were drawing really well. But just the movie pushed things over the top. We weren't able to really handle the crowds anymore. And that's when we started looking at a new ballpark, because the old ballpark just wasn't big enough, couldn't handle the crowds. But the movie just made us a national phenomenon.
By the time Bull Durham came out in 1988, Miles had already brought baseball back to Burlington, too. And you know from this podcast just how meaningful that was for us.
It was so meaningful for the players and staff, too, as you've heard through our episodes. But in case there's any doubt, here's Mike Pincus, the third baseman turned utility infielder, talking about his time in Burlington.
Like I said, man, a really special time in my life, and have some really fond memories of all those guys. And, you know, that, that town really supported, their baseball team. And, I remember, you know, the fans there were really, really good to us. And it, you know, it just, it made you really appreciate, playing the game. And
having a baseball team has also been very special for the city of Burlington. Here's Miles Wolf again.
You know, it's been sort of special. You mentioned the 90 team, you know, where the Jim Tomies of the world come through. I mean, you know, it's been sort of a matter of pride when you look at all the, you know, Burlington players who made it to the big leagues, have been in World Series.
Burlington supports its baseball. Pitchers Alan Embry and Tony Tillman made that point in episode one. And Embry, who spent more than a dozen years in the majors, said Burlington could not have provided a better start for his professional baseball career.
We'll ignore the part about the folks who didn't make them feel welcome at the bar that one night.
Technically, that was in Elon, a different municipality.
That's true. So, Ashley, what's this second mystery all about then?
To answer that, we need to back up a little. You and I started working on this podcast when?
I know that we first had the idea while having lunch at the Roasting Company in Charlotte, maybe 2017 or 2018?
Yeah, and it took us all the way until last fall to really get serious about the project. And just as soon as we started, Baseball America broke the story in October 2019 that Major League Baseball was planning to cut 42 teams from the minor league system. Under the proposed plan, each major league team would be limited to just four minor league teams. They could have one low A team, a high A team, a double A team, and a triple A team. But short season rookie league teams would be eliminated. Those young players would start playing down in Florida or Arizona at spring training complexes.
The plan became known as contraction.
In November, the New York Times published the list of teams that were proposed for elimination. By this point, people knew it was coming, but there it was in black and white. Among the 42 teams to be eliminated were teams like Bluefield, Elizabethton, Johnson City, Kingsport, Princeton, Bristol, and Burlington. Pretty much the entire Appalachian League. Only Pulaski would survive, and they'd be put into another league.
The plan was to take effect at the end of the 2020 baseball season.
It was especially bittersweet for us. We were going to launch our podcast to honor the 30th anniversary of that great 1990 team we've been talking about. Because of contraction, though, it looked like the podcast might also come out during the very last minor league season for the city of Burlington.
The contraction plan starts with something called the Professional Baseball Agreement, or the PBA. It's an agreement between the major leagues and the minor leagues. It sets the amount of minor league teams, and it's through the PBA that the majors supply players to the minors, the majors pay the player salaries, and then the minor league teams help develop those players.
The PBA also gets into just about every detail that you can imagine. The pitching mound requirements are there, as are the square footage requirements for the team locker rooms. That's why minor league teams need new stadiums or expansions every now and then, to keep up with the latest versions of the PBA.
Most of the 162 minor league teams across the country are independently owned. When Miles Wolf bought the Bulls back in 1980, he actually owned that team. But rookie leagues, they're different. The parent club in the majors actually owns the rookie league team.
When Miles brought baseball to Burlington, he never owned the team. Instead, he ran a company called the Burlington Baseball Club. That company leased the stadium from the city of Burlington, and it ran the operations.
He struck an agreement with Cleveland for Cleveland to put its rookie league team there back in 1986, and then he later struck a deal with Kansas City. But here's how it works with rookie league teams.
You know, I have a lease with the city of Burlington, and that's why the Royals then would come to me and say, hey, we want to put a team you know, give you a team, but I don't own a franchise that can be moved. It's owned by the Royals, but the Royals are happy. And, you know, we provide the facility. We, you know, staff the ballpark. We do all of that. The team, the Royals, they pay the players. They take care of meal money, bats, and balls.
The idea to change up the minor league system and to put the lowest levels down in Florida and Arizona is hardly new. In his book, Stolen Season, which came out in 1991, writer David Lamb said that some baseball executives had already been talking about it back then.
That's even why the Burlington Indians became the Burlington Royals in 2006.
The Indians were worried they weren't being competitive in the league. They were a couple of clubs that had some older players. So it was more a matter of the Indians left, but the Royals wanted to be in the Appalachian League. You know, we heard of that. We contacted them and say, hey, come look at the ballpark, meet with us and the folks. So it was a pretty easy switchover. I mean, we'd had the Indians there for 25 years in a good relationship. But as I say, they thought they should put their younger players in Florida. Lately, we've heard they wish they hadn't left.
And people have been worried about the plan for years. When the current PBA was signed back in 2011, people celebrated. It meant the minors, as we knew them, would stick around a little longer. Writer Kevin Reichard even wrote in 2011 that the Appalachian League ain't going anywhere.
The PBA expires in September of 2020, though, and Major League Baseball finally seems set on doing what it's been thinking about doing for decades.
Contraction.
Here's Dave Keller.
I don't think anybody ever really thought that something like this was going to happen. I know that I didn't.
As you can imagine, the plan to eliminate 42 minor league teams was met with a lot of opposition.
This coming from the commissioner's office. The baseball people hate it at the major league level. The farm directors, scouting directors, they love the Appy League. They think it's important for the young players to be able to come to a city, you know, the first time out, you know, to have to manage living on their own, handling money, you know, taking the bus trips, you know, playing before fans under lights. But the commissioner has gotten in his mind that this is a good idea. And to kill 42 teams, you know, is awful. And when baseball is struggling a bit, to kill it in these cities, you know, you're just going to lose fans. And, I could go on and on. It's just a bad idea.
That was Miles Wolf. We asked Miles, what would that look like if all the rookie league players started playing in Florida or Arizona? In other interviews, he's called it hothouse baseball.
Well, they would then send them to Florida or Arizona, the complex leagues, where, you know, they play at 9 in the morning. There are no fans. Everything. You know, they live in the dormitories, you know, provided at the spring training complexes. It's not learning anything about being a professional.
Miles Wolf isn't the only one who thought contraction would be a bad idea. Here's Dave Keller.
And personally, I think it's a huge injustice to the whole game and to the players that are working so hard to try to get a chance to catch a break and get to the next level and possibly get to the big leagues. I don't know why they're doing it. They don't realize how many people's jobs are at stake. You talk about 40 teams, that's about 150 coaches, trainers, strength coaches, staff people that would lose jobs. How about all those people that work in those stadiums? They would lose they'd lose their jobs. They would lose income. Some of those small towns that they love the whole atmosphere of going and watching baseball games at night in the summer when the weather's nice everywhere in those leagues. I don't understand why they want to take something like that away from those towns, because some of that stuff is really, really important to the economy of those cities.
Alan Embry is more to the point.
and it robs a lot of people out of baseball and falling in love with the game.
It's obvious that contraction will cause a huge financial loss to communities too, and not just for the amounts that would come in future seasons, but the loss of investments they've already made, whether it's getting an operation up and running or renovating stadiums to keep up with the requirements of the PBA. Here's Miles Wolf again.
For instance, in the Pioneer League, someone just bought Missoula, Montana, the franchise there, for $7 million. Well, he's left with nothing. The AAA club in Fresno is being demoted to Class A. Well, they've spent, you know, millions of dollars buying the franchise, building the stadium. Even in Burlington, the city over the last several years has spent hundreds of thousands of dollars, you know, bringing the stadium up to the major league standards that they give us. You know, as the city manager, Harden Watkins, said, we wouldn't have spent this money if the big leagues hadn't told us to.
When the contraction news came out, Burlington officials rallied. They put together a task force to try to help lobby the major leagues against carrying out the contraction plan. Tripp Durham, who started working for the Burlington team in 1986 and who spent his entire career in minor league and college athletics, signed on to help.
North Carolina's governor, Roy Cooper, wrote a letter to the commissioner of the major leagues urging him to reconsider the contraction plan.
And Congress even got involved.
Sometime last fall, I don't know when it was, September, October, we got wind that the major leagues were at an upcoming meeting, were going to move to eliminate 42 teams. We probably weren't supposed to know that, but there somehow that information got leaked out. And so that was the beginning of it. That was because that my hair stood on end at that point. How can you do this?
That's U.S. Representative David McKinley, a Republican from West Virginia. He helped get a task force going to try to make sure there was a level playing field between the majors and the minors.
Because I suspected, and I saw it at one of the meetings, that the major leagues sometimes maybe can be bullies because they control the whole, they control the show. So for them to dictate the terms as they did, I was concerned. So our role primarily in setting up first this a letter that we had 160 just a few days, we had 106 members of Congress sign on to our letter expressing concern. And when Major League Baseball continued promoting its plan, we moved it to a resolution and a task force.
Representatives from both sides of the aisle came together on this, which doesn't happen enough these days. And the resolution that McKinley mentioned, it recognized that minor league baseball clubs enrich the lives of millions of Americans each year through special economic, social, cultural, and charitable contributions.
It also said that eliminating 42 minor league baseball clubs would devastate communities.
McKinley even said there's a moral argument here.
What do you owe the community that has built a stadium and built a fan base behind them? I think we have a maybe not a legal argument, but a moral argument about what are we doing for some of these small communities.
These communities, minor league baseball means everything to them. Another member of the task force, Representative Lori Trahan, a Democrat from Massachusetts, agrees.
I will tell you that all the work that we're doing in Washington, nothing is more powerful than the stories that I hear from communities, right? So whether it's the small businesses or the little league teams that, you know, go to these Friday night games, for example, or players that have, called me and said, hey, look, if I hadn't had the chance to see, one of the pros on the mound, I'm not sure I would have ventured to play baseball or pursue a career in baseball. And so I just think that It's really important to elevate those stories. And I appreciate what your podcast does to do that, because this is an important issue. And this is a critical time for us in saving minor league baseball and ensuring that, you know, our young fans and our young future players have opportunity to see baseball no matter where they live.
Negotiations back and forth between Major League Baseball and Minor League Baseball were not going well at all. The majors said that the minors were refusing to even talk.
The majors urged Congress to push the minors to the negotiating table, and the minors fired back. They said the majors continued to misrepresent our positions with misleading information in public statements that are not conducive to good faith negotiations. When I interviewed Miles Wolf, I asked him what he thought the chances of avoiding the contraction plan were. He said they were 50-50 at best.
That was hard to hear. As we said at the start of this episode, Miles Wolf and minor league baseball go hand in hand. Even though he sold the Bulls in 1990, he held on to the Burlington operation. But in early March 2020, with so much uncertainty about the contraction plan, Miles Wolf sold the Burlington Baseball Club.
Let it go. Yes, it's time. Let it roll down the line.
In preparing this episode, I kept thinking about the rationale for contraction. The very first question I ever asked Miles in our interview was whether he could explain it.
I'm not sure I understand the rationale. I mean, they say the reason is to, you know, save money, but Major League Baseball's never been making more money than it's making now.
That might have been true in late 2019 and early 2020, but then COVID-19 hit. The NBA stopped playing. Conference basketball tournaments were canceled, and there was no March Madness. Spring training stopped. Baseball was delayed at best.
March turned into April, then April turned into May, and there was still no baseball. Major league teams were definitely losing money.
In early May, reports came out that minor league baseball was going to agree to the contraction plan. They really didn't have a choice. 42 teams would be eliminated, including Burlington.
The miners quickly put out a statement that said this: "Recent articles on the negotiations between Minor League Baseball and Major League Baseball are largely inaccurate. There have been no agreements on contraction or any other issues. Minor League Baseball looks forward to continuing the good faith negotiations with Major League Baseball."
But COVID-19 ravaged the sport. A number of major league teams stopped paying their minor league players. In our earlier episodes, we heard they were making $800 a month back in 1990. It's $1,600 a month now, and many of those checks stopped coming.
Major league teams started letting their minor leaguers go.
A recent Sports Illustrated article even said minor league teams might wind up going out of business. Forget losing rookie teams. Teams could be lost at all levels of the minors.
Remember in episode one when we said that Frank Monastero was a late-round draft pick back in 1990, that he was taken in the 59th round? The baseball draft has always had a lot of rounds.
Because of COVID-19, though, and the lack of baseball across the country, and the uncertainty of minor league baseball as a whole, not just the rookie leagues, the 2020 draft will have just 5 rounds.
What's it like at Burlington Athletic Stadium these days during what was supposed to be the 30th anniversary of the 1990 team?
Lonely. I think it's a little bit lonely. I know our guys, they did a really good job of self-isolating themselves, mostly because there were only 2 guys in the office and nobody else wanted to come see them for a couple months.
That's Ryan Kerr. He used to be the general manager for the Burlington Royals. In 2014, 2015, and 2016, he was named Appalachian League Executive of the Year. he left to become president of the Daytona Tortugas, a high A team in Florida. But Burlington always kept a piece of his heart.
I think it's a combination of history and civic pride. I think that's something that's pretty amazing is, you know, Burlington nestled there in between Durham and Greensboro, takes great pride in having their own team. And so I think that's something that always stuck out to me. And I think the way that the city has continued to invest and modernize the facility seems to stand out. It's a ballpark that was put on a train 60 years ago. And who would have thought that 60 years in the future, it's in better shape. It's in great condition. The Royals say it's maybe arguably the best playing surface throughout their entire affiliate. So it's a great ballpark. And I think those are some of the things that really stick out for me.
Ryan bought the Burlington Baseball Club from Miles Wolf in March of this year. He's still going to serve as president of the Daytona Tortugas, even though they are on the contraction list. Since he's involved with two teams on the list, Daytona and Burlington, we figured he'd be most in the know about where contraction actually stands these days.
Yeah, I don't know if we know exactly. Everything that we seem to hear is that there will be contraction. I think what that list of 40 or 42 teams looks like is still yet to be determined. I have to say the Kansas City Royals are some of the most amazing partners and one of the best affiliates you could ever ask for. When contraction talks began, you know, back in really probably last summer, and then things started to get released there in November, the Royals were the team in the Appalachian League that stepped up and said, we want no part of contraction. We want to stay in Burlington. We love everything about our current setup there. And if you give us the opportunity and you let us say where we can go and how many teams we can have, we're putting a team there in Burlington.
So to keep the Royals in Burlington, Ryan came up with a pretty unique plan.
I remember having a conversation earlier with J.J. Piccolo from the Kansas City Royals, their assistant general manager. And I said, J.J., if you want a team in Burlington, we'll find the Washington Generals to play you every single game. But I don't know if we'll have a one-team Appalachian League where just the Burlington Royals taking on the Generals every single night in 2021.
For those who may not get that reference, the Washington Generals were the team that always played the Harlem Globetrotters in basketball. No matter where the game was, it was the Globetrotters against the Generals. The Generals lost over 16,000 times.
As funny as that sounds, it's probably not too realistic. And if contraction does happen, there are a number of options for Burlington. It could be part of a new independent league with players who have had professional experience, but who aren't under any professional contracts.
A model for that is the old Northern League, which existed for nearly 20 years in Minnesota, Iowa, South Dakota, and Ontario. Miles Wolf actually started that league, and a number of players would make it to the majors from there. There were also a number of former major leaguers who played in that league, guys like Jack Morris, Dennis Oil Can Boyd, and Daryl Strawberry.
Another option is to field a team for the Coastal Plain League, which is a summer league made up of college players. The Savannah Bananas are in that league, and if you've not seen some of the great things they've been doing at their games, you should check it out. It's definitely an experience for the fans.
Whether it's minor league baseball, an independent league, a college team, or even something else, one thing is for certain.
So there definitely will be baseball in some form or fashion at the old historic Burlington Athletic Stadium in 2021.
You can take that one to the bank. Whatever comes about in Burlington, we're so committed to the ballpark, to the area, and to providing the best level of baseball possible for our fans.
Ashley, how's all this make you feel?
It's sad to think there may not be minor league baseball in Burlington. There's such a long history there. Going back to the 50s, as Miles Wolf described in our very first episode. And it's sad to think that Miles Wolf stepped away after owning that team for more than 30 years.
But sometimes change can be good, and there will still be baseball. Kerr assures us of that, which means there will still be bat boys.
Or bat girls.
There will still be antics and stories and team bonding. And Ryan Kerr knows what he's doing. Miles Wolf wouldn't have sold to just anybody. And what Miles did for 35 years, Ryan wants to do for the next 35.
And who knows, maybe there will be a podcast or even an ESPN series about one of the future Burlington teams.
And maybe, just maybe, in the dugout corridor at Burlington Athletic Stadium, there will be a historical plaque put up commemorating the spot where Ashley Pace got caught with the hot dogs. We asked Ryan Kerr if he'd do that, and he wouldn't commit.
Hey, but that means he didn't say no.
We'll keep you posted on all the latest contraction news in later episodes and on our Facebook page. Just search for the Bat Boy and the Hot Dogs. Be sure to like our page, too, if you haven't already, so that you won't miss a single update.
If I get that plaque, we'll put a picture of it here.
So that's about all we know on this whole contraction mystery, right?
Yep.
Which means in our next episode, we'll get back to the mystery of Ashley Pace, Frank Monastero, and the hot dogs.
Good. I got a lot of grief over how we left people hanging at the end of the last episode.
Sorry, not sorry?
In our next episode, we talk in detail with Frank Monastero about the hot dog incident. He definitely remembers it.
Because I use that story, like I said, I got like 150-some kids that play in my academy, and they're always looking, you know, well, you played professional ball, you got any stories?
You know the line at this point. You'll hear about all of that and more on the next episodes of the mysterious and unbelievable case of the Bat Boy and the Hot Dogs.
The music for our podcast continues to be brought to us courtesy of the band Cabinet. Please check them out at cabinetmusic.com or on Facebook and Instagram at Cabinet Music.
Little baby, now that I know, guess that I'll be letting you go. You left me wearing these scars, but I'd still over all my guitars. Now, oh, little baby, what have I done?